Rabbi Ovadia Sforno was a major Italian rabbinic figure, major Italian rabbinic authority, lived in the 1400s into the 1500s. He's most well known for his commentary on Chumash, as well as other parts of Tanakh, known generally as the Sforno. He was also, in addition to being a major rabbinic authority to whom others looked, other rabbis looked for rabbinic guidance and halachic guidance. He was also a philosopher. He was well-versed in math, and in particular, he was a practicing physician. Sforno, in the beginning of this week's parsha, Parshas Vayikra, makes a comment that when the Torah describes Vayikra el Moshe, that God called out to Moshe, summoned Moshe, called out to Moshe, as if God was in one location and Moshe was in a different location, and therefore God had to call out to him, as the pasuk says, continuing, Vayedaber Hashem Elov Mi Ohel Moed. So the God was in the Ohel Moed. God's presence, God's Shechina, God's glory, was in the interior of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, in the sanctuary location, the sanctuary region, just outside the inner sanctuary where the Ark, where the Aron was. So God had to call out to Moshe because Moshe was not inside the Mishkan. Says the Sforno that Moshe would not be inside. As long as the glory of God was there, Moshe would not enter out of respect to God's Shechina, God's presence. As the Sforno says, Kuli Kanes Shom Le'olam B'li Rishus, he wouldn't enter where God's presence was most concentrated, was most present. Moshe would not enter without permission. Apparently, as the Sforno goes on to explain, God adjusted the presence of his Shechina, of the glory of God, and concentrated it more within the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the inner sanctuary where the Ark was, so that Moshe was then permitted to enter the sanctuary and then communicate with God while God was speaking to him from the inner sanctuary, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the innermost sanctuary. Moshe was able to enter. Here, Moshe was on the outside. That's consistent with the end of last week's parsha, where the Torah describes at the end of Pekudei that Vaychase Ononis Ha'Oel Moed, that the cloud covered the Oel Moed. The Oel Moed is in the sanctuary, inside the Mishkan, the tabernacle. Uchvod Hashem, and the glory of God, Moleis HaMishkan, filled the entire Mishkan, completely filled, permeated it. And therefore, V'lo Yechol Moshe Levo Lo Ohel Moed. Moshe was not allowed. Moshe couldn't, he wasn't allowed, he wouldn't, out of respect to God, Ki Shechan Olav Hanan, because the cloud of glory was there. Rashi resolves the issue of when Moshe was permitted to come into the sanctuary and when he was not, based on the Anon's position. Rashi explains at the end of last week's parsha that as long as the cloud of glory was present, hovering over the Mishkan, Moshe would not enter the Mishkan. When the cloud displaced itself, it disengaged for whatever reason, then Moshe would be permitted to enter. The Sforno does not follow that approach. Sforno seems to say that the cloud was ever present, and God's presence was ever present. God never removed his presence. The Sforno, at the end of last week's Parshas, the very last comment of his in last week's Parshas, says the following. Uvehelos Hanan, the next pasuk after the one describing Moshe's inability or lack of permission or lack of comfort entering the Mishkan out of deference to God's presence. Uvehealos Hanan mi al Mishkan, and when the cloud would disengage, when it would ascend and relocate elsewhere from its position over the tabernacle, Yisu b'nei Yisrael, the Jewish people would travel. So the Sforno wants to understand, how did the Jewish people know? How did the Jewish people know that when the cloud removed itself from its normal position hovering over the tabernacle, that was an indication they should travel? Maybe the Anan, maybe the cloud of glory, like Rashi seems to suggest, repositioned itself at other times, like perhaps to accommodate Moshe coming into this sanctuary to be able to then speak with God. And God would then relocate to the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the inner sanctuary. The Sforno doesn't seem to say this. Sforno, in this week's Parsha, is that was not what permitted Moshe to enter. Moshe was permitted because God relocated his presence, but not that there were times that God's presence or the Anun, the cloud, somehow disengaged itself from its position over the Mishkan. The cloud never moved except when the Jewish people would travel. Says the Sforno, V'chol kach hoysa shriyas hashchina keva b'mishkan, to such an extent God's presence and glory was so fixed, so tightly linked within the Mishkan, within the tabernacle, shlo hayo mistalek klal misham, it would never disengage from there. Never. Not to accommodate Moshe coming in, not for any other reason, not for reasons that perhaps the Jewish people didn't deserve God's presence. Never. It never, ever relocated or disengaged, except when the Jewish people needed to travel. Then that would be an indication for them to follow the Anun to the next station, to the next particular location. Asher Yisrael Shrichim Nusoa. V'zeh, says the Sforno, this ever presence of God's glory in the Mishkan, which seems to be in contrast to Rashi's approach, this ever fixed presence of God permeating the Mishkan is something that is so unique to the tabernacle of the desert, says the Sforno, v'zeh lo haya b'shilo v'lo b'bayis rishon v'lo b'bayis sheni. This was not the case ever, ever again. It wasn't the case ever in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel. Not with the Mishkan, the Tabernacle, and Shiloh. Not in the first Beis Hamikdash built by Shlomo ben King Salman. And certainly not in the second temple built by Ezra. It was never again like that. The Sforno, early in Parshas Pekudei, suggests why that was. Why was God's presence so fixed, so attached to the Mishkan, that it would never relocate from where it was for any reason except to facilitate the travel of the Jewish people. So he explains a little bit. Those who are interested can certainly look at this Sforno earlier in Parshas Pekudei. But I'd like to suggest the following. We can understand that God's presence would sometimes be in position over the tabernacle in Shiloh, and sometimes it would say, no, I'm leaving. Because during the time of the Mishkan Shiloh, those few hundred years, there were times that the Jewish people sinned and were evil in the eyes of God. They worshipped idols, famous stories involving the sons of Eli. So there were reasons, justifications for God disengaging from the Mishkan Shiloh. First Beis HaMikdash, Bayis Rishon, certainly that would be the case. There was certainly Avodah Zarah during those hundreds of years as well that was in force, and that idolatry and the kind of the civil enmity within the Jewish people certainly prompted God to relocate at times. Second Beis HaMikdash, Sforno says God was never there from the beginning to the end, never there. That aside, certainly the Second Temple had a lot of failings historically. Well, the Mishkan in the desert did not involve a perfect history of the Jewish people. Even if the Mishkan was established post the sin of the golden calf, the Jewish people still sinned subsequently. The sin of the Meraglim, the sin of the spies, Korach, the rebellion, other murmurings and complaints the Jewish people had. It's not as if the Jewish people were somehow perfect during the 39 years in the desert that would somehow give them the privilege to have God's Shekhinah, God's glory, consistently, permanently within the Mishkan, the tabernacle, for those 39 years, never, never, ever moving from there, except to facilitate travel of the Jewish people. why was the Mishkan, and specifically in the desert, of such a holy status that it was, according to the Sephorno, in certain ways greater than the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash? Why would that be? The thought that I had was that it's not so much the Jewish people were perfect in the desert, but it's who the Jewish people in the desert were. The Jewish people in the desert for those 39 years was made up of the Jews who were liberated from Egypt, the Jews who came out from Egypt, older, younger. Those Jews who came out from Egypt were survivors. They were survivors of the Holocaust of Egypt. And God says that for survivors, my Shechina is ever present. For a survivor to come out of Egypt, for a survivor to come out of Auschwitz, Bergen-Belsen, or any of the other myriad of concentration camps, labor camps, all kinds of sufferings, Russian labor camps, all of the survivors, those who were hidden, all survivors, God says, who come out of Egypt, who come out of Germany, who come out of Europe, and still have a commitment to me, maybe not as perfect as others might, maybe not as meticulous, maybe not as error-free, maybe not always as loving and fervent and respectful as others might, but for a survivor who comes out into the desert and says, Nasa v'nishma, I'll accept your Torah, even if they falter later on here and there, my Shechina, my divine presence and glory will never move from the Mishkan, will never leave the tabernacle. And that aspect of God's presence always being there for survivors, and in addition to what survivors demonstrate and articulated with what they did in terms of their commitment, in terms of their uncanny belief in God's strength, in finding God, it's also the fact, God says, that this generation that came out of Egypt, like the generation that came out of the Holocaust, this generation is the one that established, that gave rise, that raised the next generation. The next generation, God says, is the one that's going to enter the land of Canaan, the land of Israel, and settle it and establish it. But that generation could never have done it without the guidance, without the principles and values embedded within them that they derived from the survivors. And with Medinat Yisrael, it was the survivors who established Medinat Yisrael, not like Eretz Canaan, initially Eretz Yisrael, where that generation was totally no longer alive, except for two individuals, perhaps. Medinat Yisrael was established by survivors, and God's presence, therefore, in Medinat Yisrael is all the more present, all the more linked, all the more attached. The Sephardo concludes last week's Parsha's comment, Avol Yosir Mizeh Yiyeh B'Bayis Shlishi. But as amazing and spectacular and unbelievable as the Mishkan was in terms of God's permeating, consistent presence, much more than that will be what transpires with the ultimate temple, the Bayis Shlishi, this third temple that will be built in Messianic days. God will be more present then. And I would just conclude with the fact that on Unfortunately, which is an understatement, tragically, which is another understatement, Medinat Yisrael has become an entire state of survivors. Hostages who have survived, families of hostages who have not survived, families who have, soldiers who have survived, soldiers who have not survived, their families who survived, civilians who survived. All the families in the diaspora who have lone soldiers, hostages, or those serving, or those who have not survived. Medinat Yisrael and many, many diaspora Jews is a Medina of survivors after October 7th. And so perhaps we can invoke the Sephorno to ask of God that at this point in time, with so many survivors, maybe he can restore his Shechina, his presence, to be fully permeating Medinat Yisrael, fully present to protect, to secure Medinat Yisrael and Am Yisrael, and to provide everlasting shalom, ubracha, for Am Yisrael.